Being a ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from women from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Normally, my guests on this podcast are women, but today I am privileged to welcome James Roberson to the podcast. James grew up in Westchester County outside of New York City. In 2011, he graduated from Southeastern Seminary while simultaneously pastoring a church in Raleigh. James has since helped to plant churches in Maryland, Georgia, and New York. He started the Bridge Church in Brooklyn in 2014. James is married to Natasha, and together they have three girls. And you might recognize Natasha's name because she's been on the podcast before, and everything she said about her husband made me want to interview him. So James joins me today to talk about how we can honor and support our spouse in ministry. This is an important conversation, and I would highly recommend that you listen with your spouse. I guarantee it will lead to a lot of good conversation. Here, friends, is my conversation with James Roberson. I am super excited to welcome James Roberson to the podcast. Welcome, James.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I am so excited to have this conversation because I got to talk to your lovely wife, Natasha, a few seasons back on my previous podcast, By Faith, and I just loved her so much, and she said some things in there about you that made me want to get to pick your brain. So here you are.
Yes, yes, here I am. Honored to be here.
Will you introduce yourself and your family and tell us about your ministry context?
Sure. Well, my name is James. I pastor a church in Brooklyn, New York, along with my wife who serves there. And my wife and I have been married 20 years, and we met doing campus ministry. We met at a leadership conference, and then we'd eventually go down to Texas doing campus ministry, got married down there, have three beautiful daughters, Faith, Leah, and Sophia. We serve in downtown Brooklyn. We moved here in 2013, and it was incredibly hard. We didn't have a lot of resources. I was new to Send Network, and essentially meaning that I did not have a network of churches of support, so I was going off of individual support. So we really started grassroots, and then our first core team, our first couple of people were all Brooklynites, and then the Lord just allowed us to start a Bible study the summer of 2013. And so now we're downtown. We're in a smaller space than we'd like, but we do two services there, downtown Brooklyn. And it's super diverse community, not generationally diverse. Average age is 26, 85% wow. Single. Yeah. But the Lord has allowed us to be here 8 years as a church, 9 years as a couple.
Wow. So the church is established.
That's what they call it now, huh? It's no longer. It doesn't feel that way.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? It feels, but it's, yeah. I mean, we're definitely not. The Lord has blessed us.
Absolutely. Good. I'm so thankful. It is weird to call it established, but when you've been there that long, it is. But in that context, I would imagine it doesn't feel established because it's transient. People in and out. If it's young, people are moving away from the city, moving into the city. I would imagine that's just, it's never going to feel quite established.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, we got mostly Brooklynites when we got here. So we didn't experience transients.
Oh, good.
Until the pandemic.
And
when the pandemic hit, folks were like, well, if I can keep a New York salary and move to Kansas, I'm going to do that. And I couldn't fault them. You know, So we lost a little bit over 40% of our church. From the pandemic.
Wow.
We were 18 months on camera, so I had my televangelist dreams come true. but by God's absolute mercy and grace, there was just a new wave of people that had been isolated over the pandemic. And the minute we opened the doors, we just kept growing. So we're not back to what we were.
Yeah.
But we are definitely at a very good place.
Can we just talk about that for a second? Because sure. I think you just described for most church planters, if not established churches, what the pandemic did. And yeah. pastors have been through so much. I've seen yes. it in my own husband, and I just so much respect how he handled it, but it took a toll.
Yes.
Can you just speak to that of how you have experienced that as a pastor?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rich Velotis uses a acronym CPR, and he says first we dealt with COVID, then we dealt with political idolatry, and then we dealt with racial hostility. Mm-hmm. And then, so if I were to add to that acronym for us, there was also gender issues that came into our space. So if any kind of grouping politically, ethnically, everyone hunkered down into some kind of enclave with a lot of tension. And that infiltrated the church. People were more isolated. I was accused of things, and I was accused by people that blew my mind. Like literally, like I just, my brain couldn't comprehend it. So I think I was very wounded by some of the accusations. And when I say that, I mean, like saying I was a misogynist because I didn't allow some woman to do something in the church. And it was just like, it had nothing to do with her being a woman, it had to do with her character. And so just being accused of things that were just so left field, and then simultaneously seeing people leave well, but just seeing so many of them. Huh. And then, you know, I know Jesus goes after the one and leaves the 99, but it felt like I was leaving the one and going after 99. Like I was like, everybody's leaving. Like, I don't even know who's here. I didn't know who we were. And that left some kind of, I don't know, it just kind of left me confused for a while. But I'll tell you this one last thing. I do think the healthy, you know, the imagery that 1 Peter 4 gives of don't be surprised by these fiery trials, right? Like, I think that what Peter is trying to say is that we should consider testing as part of our understanding of not only suffering, but sanctification. And if we can look back at it, I can look at some things that God had to burn away from me. We all come from like broken families, broken spaces, or something imperfect. And sometimes we try to turn the church into a space of loyalty and connection. And the reality is these people are broken. And so I think God really burned away a lot of the kind of way that I tethered my sense of affirmation to Sundays. I mean, I know that people were saying amen, but in a lot of ways, in my own broken narcissistic heart, I heard, I love you, right? Like, oh, I accept you. And when that got taken away, I didn't have that shot to the soul. So in a lot of ways, though it was very traumatizing, it was still a test. And the refiner's fire still does what it does. He burned away a lot of my unhealthy patterns and dependence that I had on people. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for being honest about what it did, because I think that happened, that you just described similar things of what we experienced, and it's good, but yes. It was really, really trying, really trying. And I think this is a perfect segue, because I think with all that happening, what it did is it affected our marriage. It affected the ways that we sought to support and encourage one another. It showed us things, maybe some unhealthy dynamics in our own marriage of trying to prop up some of that idolatry and the things that God was stripping away. And so I'd love to talk about you and your wife and how you approach ministry together as a couple. So maybe let's start with just, how do you see that God has gifted you to complement one another for the ministry you're doing?
In general, my wife is the type of person that she sees detail. I see the general field of what could be. She sees detail. And so I am in meetings with her, and she'll be like, did you mention, did you say, don't forget, you know, that is my wife. She is able to see all the in between that I see as I see broadly. And so that's kind of the complement in terms of what I have and what she has, like differences. But then there's similarities. Like, you know, we both played sports. We both came out of we both had a Black church background, and we're both from the Northeast. So we're going the same direction. You know, we both got discipled in college. So that allows us to have a similarity in vision, but we complement each other in the way that we, you know, the way that she literally just sees everything I don't see. And I think we've cultivated a culture of honesty mixed with safety, mm-hmm. which allows me to hear things I don't want to hear.
Okay. So when she was on the podcast before, she mentioned something almost in passing that I couldn't stop thinking about. And as I wanted to ask her so many things about, but it wasn't the topic of our conversation. But she mentioned that you seek to care for her by giving her time away every summer. Can you tell us about that and where that idea came from?
Well, let me zoom out, Nat. So I've been here 9 years, and on two sides, if a guy comes here to plant a church, he's extremely excited. If he leaves, generally his excitement didn't leave. It's that his wife was unable to carry the load. And it's not actually a knock on his wife. It's the nature of this space. The social, emotional, spiritual, and financial burdens of New York City are intense. And it's just not as simple. You're walking down the street with a carriage and it's freezing and your kid is bundled up like in an igloo and you're going to do laundry, right? So it feels like you're in war. And so I realized pretty early, the rhythms that I had in the South, I could not mimic in the North. And literally we were living in 600 square feet. We had a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, or 3-year-old and a 4-year-old. We were living in 600 square feet, paying $2,500 a month for that. And there are no windows. So I'm going out doing ministry, and I would come back and my wife would just be depleted. And I'm like, what do you do? And she's just like, I'm not experiencing life. And then you go on a train. And so I learned pretty early on, this has got to be a space that I commit. I've got to figure out how to keep my wife healthy, not just involved, right? But I got to keep my wife healthy, because this place it spiritually crushes you. And it first started with her going up to see her parents every now and then, who are in Boston. And then as the kids got older, we had some more freedoms. And I started to commit to weekends away where I could just be on my own. And then I'd come back and she'd have like a ventilator. She's like, I need one of those. And I'm like, yeah. Why shouldn't you get one of those? And so then we started to incorporate, and this is no timing of our own, but she literally just got back an hour ago from her weekend away. Literally, or her 2 days away. She got back Tuesday and Wednesday. Just goes to a local hotel. Well, and also for us, school starts tomorrow. And so then, she was like, hey, maybe I can get 2 days away before school so I can get my brain together, think through schedule. Of course, go, you know. So a lot of it, maybe the reason why not everyone does this is they just haven't had to fight in such an intense environment. Mm-hmm. We also don't have family here. There's no, you know, cousin down the street, we can just drop our kids off. So it's all we have is us. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why we kind of incorporated that as well.
I think that what you're describing is something that anyone should consider, no matter where they are, church planting. Yeah. What you describe about this city, I can understand. It's almost in your face how much you need nature and air and sun.
Yes.
But I think every marriage, every pastor, pastor's wife, they need things like this incorporated into their rhythms, but many don't do it. Could you speak to a pastor listening with his wife who, let's say church planter, because I think this is where we experienced it. The rhythms go out the window and everything becomes about the church and growing this church and reaching people. And it's all really good things. Yeah. but so easily the marriage can get shifted off to the side.
Yeah.
Human, you know, as a human being, as a man, as a woman, that can be pushed off to the side. So what would you say to pastors listening about incorporating rhythms? And I'm even thinking about paying for it. Some of the things you're saying is like financially.
Yes.
Why is this important?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a couple things. So I do a marriage conference that we started here in New York City. And so I've done it for pastors. And at the end of the marriage conference, we have this moment where we give a script on how to speak about things that you may have been burying. Like, and so for wives, pastors' wives, one of the first things you hear about is when you come home and you're always on your phone, or when you're here, but you're not here. And the way that you invest and think about ministry stuff, I wish I could get just a percentage of that into the home, right? And those are constant things that you hear about, and we model it. My wife gets up there and she says something on her heart, and don't you know she has a new thing every time? I'm like, can we repeat something, please? Could I be ready? Good, this is great. She's like, I got something fresh out the microwave for you. So, but my point is that's to your point. That's when I started to see, oh man, I don't think guys are being equipped to think about their wives as ministry partners. I think they're being equipped. And I think it's good, particularly in Reformed and Baptist circles, complementarian theology is great. But I think the truth is, particularly in a church planting space, God had to speak to both of y'all. The Lord spoke to Mary and to Joseph. So God had to speak to both of y'all. So that's the first element of partnership. But the other thing is, no matter if you have an egalitarian theology where you say, my wife is the co-pastor, or you have a complementarian theology, say, my wife is just in the ministry. Either way, your wife has the most investment in that church as much as you have. There is no one investing in that church to the degree, I don't care how much they volunteer, I don't care how much they pray. No one is investing in that church as much as your wife is. So what I say is involvement may increase or decrease. My wife may be over the hospitality, or she may just be making cookies for people to come over my house. But involvement increases and decreases, but investment is always top shelf. My wife cares about how the graphics look on the screen. My wife cares about the children. She cares more than anybody else. And I know this for a fact because I've seen people who care and leave. And my wife never leaves because I haven't left. So I think it's the word investment is not. And I think we only think of involvement, we don't think of investment. And we've got to say, if she's a partner, she is as invested as I am. And I think we would then look at them as an investor, right? We would care about their feelings, their thoughts. Even if they haven't been in a meeting, I should still care about what you think about it because you're as highly invested because you were there when no one was there. And that's a different feeling.
How would you encourage pastors who are listening with their wives to see and express that? You're saying we have equal investment. I think sometimes what happens is the wives are assessed. Mm-hmm. And they realize, oh, I gotta do well in this assessment because I matter to
in that moment, at least.
Right.
At least the moment you matter. Yes.
But then
yes,
what I experienced was once the assessment was done, it almost felt like I didn't matter anymore. Like I have to kind of fall in line and support him and what he's called to. And I wanted to do that. I cared very deeply about that. Over time, I realized, so it's like, wait a second, I also have gifts and passions. And so how, my question is coming out of this,
I hear it.
How would you encourage pastors who are listening to see their wives and not just to express value for them, but to to support them equally in their ministry.
Yeah. This is an unfortunate dynamic about church planting. We, as church planters, we have a hard time considering this, the emotional and spiritual and even the gifting dynamics of our wives, because I don't know if we're going at a pace that even allows us to consider how I'm doing, right? Like my own soul, the intense amount of pressure, the intense amount, the way that we've tethered identity to church planting success is wildly toxic and narcissistic. I mean, I can remember early on, I did an announcement. And after, I'm like, how did I do? And it was just an announcement. It wasn't even a big deal. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I am bringing up all of this childlike need to the table. So one, I think the first thing, in the old analogy of putting your own oxygen mask on first, I think pastors got to get emotionally healthy enough to slow down and consider what's happening in their soul.
Yes.
Then you can look to your wife and you can pause for a second and be, hey, how is this affecting you? Where are you at? See, I think the navigation of my wife's gifts is a broader, holistic navigation of her mind, her soul, her body, how she's with the kids. And I need to budget time to assess all of that in order to not just maintain a healthy marriage that looks great for pictures, but Jesus, in his sovereign vision for my life, chose my wife, not for my ministry, for my life, for my health, for my sanctification. Knowing how she's doing is a part of a dynamic of learning about this ministry agent, this person of change, along with the Holy Spirit. God gave me Natarsha to grow. So me investigating who she is and how she's doing is a part of me learning part of the ministry that God has given me for my life. So it's a broad answer, but it really, the problem isn't just guys don't slow down to investigate their wives. They're not looking into their own souls enough. And so this is why a lot of burnout happens, because guys aren't just doing ministry. They're trying to prove themselves on stage. And so if they can slow down, bring things back to their why you started. We didn't start to have church plants. When you got saved, you won't think about no church plant. It wasn't about church planting. It was about Jesus Christ and your friends. That's it. It was like, oh man, I want to see my friends get saved. And somehow it turned into this industrious thing. And we have to get back to simplicity in ministry, slowing down enough to care for, to receive the love of God, and then allow the love of God to pour into your wife, you know? And I think that disruption of the soul has caused so many guys to be fighting. They're fighting. And they're really not doing ministry. They're trying to feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and no amount of people can do that.
Yeah. I think that it can often become where the wife becomes a tool for ministry. Someone to, you know, wherever there's a hole, put her there. She has to be there. She has to do that. And
absolutely.
And she will, because she loves her husband and she wants the church plant to succeed and she wants to be a servant. But I think that the key, what we have found in our marriage is, if the key is for us to, if we're not listening to one another, if I'm just a tool for my husband's ministry, or he's just a tool for mine, and he's unwilling or I'm unwilling to hear the truth of where the other is, or what we're seeing, what our warning signs, you know, if we're saying, hey, I don't know about that, I don't feel good about that, I feel neglected, or, you know, whatever it is, if we're unwilling to listen because that gets in the way of the trajectory we want to be on, then that's when we're going to have issues.
Yeah. And I'll say one other thing to that, to your point, Christine, that I have never worked harder on anything more than this church plant. It's on one side. There is no one on planet Earth that I take more seriously their words outside of Jesus than my wife. Combining that, when my wife has a critique, the way that that thing feels is powerful. And I so want to be right. Sometimes I want to be right more than I even want to have the conversation. I'm like, I'm not even listening. I just kind of want to get past the moment because of the feeling that I feel.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're critiquing me. It feels so personal. But again, you've got to be really walking with the Spirit. It's not just the method of list along with that, but you've got to be walking with the Spirit to be truly able to hear hard things. And as a wife, we have to say things gently, because even said in the right tone, it's still hard.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, let's go there, because that was my next question.
Okay, let's go.
So for wives listening, they see, maybe they're just, everything you're saying, they're like, oh, I just hope my husband's listening to this, because I feel some of this. I feel I'm concerned. I feel that his identity is too much in this church plant.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can a wife approach her husband in a gentle, loving way, but with truth?
You know, one of the statements made about conflict is to make observations, not accusations. And part of what we try to teach is, when you begin with an observation, the next thing to move to is talking not about them. Like, honey, I noticed that you come home and you are on your phone. And here's what I begin to think in my head. I begin to think that you are not interested in the family. And here's the way that makes me feel. It makes me feel like your ministry is more important than me. And here's what I do. I then go in my room and I start scrolling on my phone, because I just feel like I might as well check out too. And so here's a request I would like to make, right? And so a lot of that arc is about what I'm observing, and then what's going on in me, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, and how I act. And what I've found the most helpful and gentle thing we can do is, I find that most couples who love God don't want to hurt one another. Just as a mark, I just don't. And when you can talk about, this is how this is affecting me, and then try to make a request, the hope is that that creates a better palette to talk about that. And sometimes in the middle of those statements, it's good to acknowledge, I know that you are giving everything. I know that this means a lot to you. It means a lot to me too. Just acknowledging their hard work, you know, but being able to talk about how you're being affected by the loneliness, sometimes feeling like you are a prop, sometimes feeling like you talk about our marriage in ways that sound great, but are fundamentally haven't been true for years. You know, I mean, there's things that need to be communicated gently, but to honor, you know, to honor the reality that he is under both of them are under just an incredible attack of the enemy. Mm-hmm. And he would love nothing more than for him, the husband, to turn her into the enemy, and for her to turn him into the enemy. That would be his greatest delight. Mm-hmm. So if we can just say, my husband is under the attack of the enemy. He is just trying to turn this ministry into an identity. And I just pray against the activity of Satan, like praying deep prayers against the way that this toxic space changes the love of ministry into a need for identity, praying that, not just having a conversation. I think we have to have an infinite amount of conversations with Jesus before we have a conversation with our husband, because whatever he hears, it's going to be because what's happening on the inside. And so just saturating those moments in prayer and not coming to those moments in the flesh, not trying to win the conversation, but trying to take away the kind of the stronghold. This is a stronghold. I mean, I say this not as, oh, this is what happened. This is me. Like, I've been so many times just thinking about how am I going to do before I get up in front of a stage, not thinking about Jesus. I'm not even thinking about Jesus. I'm talking about him, but I'm literally not even thinking about Jesus as I get up on stage. And I said, this is a yoke. This is a stronghold. And so I think ministry wives need to feel that need for prayer and maybe partner with some other wives in that prayer so that yeah. deep need goes towards intercession, not resentment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. All that you said was so good. Mm. I as a pastor, what is it that Natarsha does? I know this is going to be very unique to you, but I would imagine it translates. What does she do or say or pray that is the most supportive for you? How does she encourage you and help you that just gives you wings?
Too many to count. I come out of, you know, a broken relationship in my family, and when my parents got divorced, I was like, we have problems? I didn't even know we had problems. How are we getting a divorce? So I think what that did inside of me was a desire for honesty.
Mm.
And my wife has that gift. is the gift of honesty. I think I need someone. I needed someone who I knew under no circumstances would tell me something I just wanted to hear.
Mm.
In addition to that, though, I needed someone that would say it the way I need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife holds together those two things. And she will tell you, when we first got married, my wife was giving me straight, no chaser bullets, straight out the gun. I mean, it was just like, boom. I mean, I can remember, this will bless somebody. I can remember we were in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was in a Bible, I used to pastor in Raleigh. And I was pastoring a church there, and I had done a Bible study. And a woman shared a very deep moment. And I kind of moved on because I didn't really know how to deal with it.
Uh-huh.
Girl, we got in the car. My wife was like, what were you thinking? How, babe, you can't. And it was just 30 minutes of just blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, you know. And so, you know, years later, she, but it was kind of like, it was able, you know, years of conversations of saying, babe, when you feel it, don't say it like you feel it. Like, you may be frustrated, but I already feel bad. Like, don't say it like you feel it. Say it like you think I need to hear it. Because if you say it like you feel it, it just compounds what I think the moment and my own depraved soul does. And so she has over 20 years become an expert at knowing not just what she feels, but what she, you know, what she thinks I need, how I need to hear it, not just what I need to hear. And it's an art. Mm-hmm. And it's because she loves me and I love her. And so, and I know that even the wives on here love their husbands, you know, they love their husbands and they want to see them win.
Yeah.
So it takes saying it the wrong way and then welcoming how to say it better.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it takes humility for a husband to want to hear the voice of their wife.
Yes. Yes. I want to switch back to focusing on you pastors and how you seek to bless your wife. But this time thinking more publicly, you know, just I think that Natarsha shared with me as well that you really are intentional about creating a culture of honor around her publicly in the church. What does that mean and how do you do that?
I think that part of what we've done forgive me for always talking about church planting as a culture, but I think a lot of people are just kind of under a framework. I think what we've done in church planting is that we have really tried to create spaces for community and relationship and connection. And part of that is we kind of not lower the bar of authority, but we kind of try to create this like almost like youth church vibe where I'm Bill and this is Tina and we're just your friends.
Right.
And what I've learned over time is that I really need to lead these people spiritually. And what we realized was there's really imagery of double honor given to pastors. And I think that my wife, because she carries the weight of our ministry, she is deserving of that honor as well. There's no verse in particular that speaks to that. But I do think the worker is worth their wages. And although we're not talking finances, I do think there's a burden that my wife carries that is not always recompensed financially. So my job is to, one, speak honestly about where my wife is at sometimes. So, my wife has the freedom to be involved with some things and not be involved with some things. Right. And so I'm not going to let anybody else define my wife's role in the church. The other thing is my wife needs to live out her gifting and calling. And so if she wants to teach, then she's going to be part of teaching in some environment. If she doesn't want to teach though, and that's some of the pressure we felt, like, honey, do you want to teach more? And she's like, I don't know. And I was like, well, don't feel pressure. You're my wife. You're not like, you're my wife. So I think that we had to really fend off the intrinsic pressure that people put on her. And then when my wife has an opinion, we need to honor that opinion, even though, and this may sound, I don't know how this sounds, but my wife doesn't have to have a position in the church for her opinion to be mattering at a deeper level than some other folks, simply because the first Bible study we did, she was taking care of the kids, doing the Bible study when we had two people. There is no one that knows more about this ministry and more about me than her. And so I make space for her because I think her opinion comes from a historical, emotional narrative that no one else has. So, so I make room for her in that. And I don't care. Now, that said, there are times when we disagree. Maybe that's another bag. There are times when we disagree because she's not always involved. There's another world that's been happening that, no, babe, that was that way 2 years ago, but that's not that way. Mm-hmm. You know? And so we have to have that conversation. And I think she talked about this. That was hard for her. Yeah. That was hard, man. Like when she was my number one receiver. She was catching everything. You know? Then all of a sudden we drafted somebody else and she, you know, she's not getting the emails. And she was like, she said, that was hard for me to see other people replace me in the ministry, but it's good for the ministry. And so that was an intense conversation.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize how much the investment connected to her own identity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wasn't seeing that. And so we had to pull over at a gas station and have that whole conversation. She wasn't getting some emails and I was like, well, you know, you're not as involved. And when I said that, it did something. Mm-hmm. And we had to have that conversation and all that said, working out her ability to have space and lead is a huge art form because her opinion is so big in our ministry, but it's not always right, but it's always necessary. So I try to leave space for her and we do that dance and, you know,
mm-hmm. You mentioned, at some point you used the word protecting her.
Yeah. Big time.
What does that mean? In what sort of ways do you protect your wife in ministry?
Well, there's her internal protection because the enemy is attacking her and attacking me. She feels pressure for the church to grow. She feels pressure for, like I said, we've put graphics on the screen and she's like, who put that together? Like she's just as invested as I am. Right. So she feels the things I feel. But then there are people who want my wife to be, they want my wife to be something, right? They want my wife to be me. They want James T. I'm James T. Roberson III. They want James T. Roberson IV, mm-hmm. right? And they want her to be me. And sometimes because of that pressure, she'll want to try to be me. Not try, but she'll feel that pressure.
Yeah.
So I have to give people space to know I married a person that was not myself. And so part of that is, my wife's going to help out. And sometimes that means my wife's going to teach. Sometimes that means my wife's going to organize. Sometimes that means my wife's going to attend. Mm-hmm. We don't get that pushback now, but there was a time when we did. Mm. And a lot of it was people wanting a father and mother. Yeah.
Yes.
It was people wanting to replace their broken family and try to make the church. And the church is a family, but we have one father.
Right.
Mm. And so we're your big brother, big sister, but we can't parent you in that
way. Yeah. Interesting. So just final question, James, I'm thinking, you know, I see what my husband does. I don't see everything, but he has so much on his plate. I mean, we started this conversation talking about some of the emotional weight that pastors have dealt with over the past few years. And so I feel for him, you know, I'll say for wives, what happens in church planting a lot is that we don't want to be another squeaky wheel. And so we kind of hold ourselves back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we want to protect him.
Yes.
And so what does that look like for a church planter and his wife to give an intentional time to each other, to the family, to things outside of the church plant when they have so much else going on? Do you have any practical ways that you seek to be intentional in that?
Well, every Monday, my wife and I have just we have a meeting. We go over our finances in that time. We go over our goals. We spend some time praying. And that's kind of us scheduling things. It's a lot of scheduling that happens. And that's, you know, your values and priorities are met by time, like making time for things. And that's kind of the most practical thing that we've ever done is make time to make time. Every Monday at 10 o'clock, that's when we get together and we sit down and we talk about where we're going on vacation. What are we doing to get away? How are the kids? Hey, did you notice this? You know, that, cause that used to be our date night, which
feel like, no, it's not romantic.
We're talking about, how's she going to do in school? And we just learned, like, this is not a date. This is something different. Mm-hmm. So it's an actual meeting because we're dealing with the family structure, right? Mm-hmm. Cleaning schedules and stuff like that. So we do that every Monday. And I've found that takes away a lot of the tension of things that I think my wife desires. I can make a plan right then. Or she can hear something I'm concerned about. We can just have that meeting right then. And we have a whole agenda and we have a Google Doc that has a whole, we have a folder for it. And we create an agenda and we look back at the last agenda and we talk about all just the practical things. And so, but the number one thing that happens from that is scheduling things mm-hmm. that we feel like matter.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. I've loved this conversation. And it also makes me wonder about this marriage conference that you guys lead.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So right now, it's called The Power of Us. And I've led it in a bunch of different places. And I'm also going to churches. And mm-hmm. It's a 2-day, I call it a couples assessment. And so it allows couples, I deal with like their family background a little bit. And we talk about conflict and communication. And so it's mostly a Friday night. And then I do Saturday. Most of the day, mm-hmm. half the day. Right now, we've got one slated in the Bronx. I've tried to keep them in New York. I haven't done any nationally in about a year.
Okay.
The last one I did was like in Maine. The layout is at powerofus.nyc. Right now, the only thing on there is like I think an old conference that we have coming up. So it's not updated right now.
Okay.
But, But yeah, that's the conference I do. And if anybody wanted to have us come down, they could just email me and it'd be fun.
I people are going to want to after listening to what you shared. And they all are like, we got to meet this Natasha.
Oh, now listen.
She's awesome.
Great. She is awesome.
Well, you are too. I've enjoyed this. Thanks so much, James, for sharing with us.
Honored to be here.
Thanks so much for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. If you found this content helpful, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.